Good afternoon. I'm Linda Rudolph. I work with the Center for Climate Change and Health at the Public Health Institute in California. And I want to first thank all of you for coming today. I'm going to spend just a minute telling you what we think we're going to do today, which is basically start by offering up some examples of different places around the country that are implementing health and all policies in some form or another, and then have a conversation where hopefully we'll hear from others of you in the room that are either doing some kind of health and all policies initiative or that are contemplating doing some kind of a health and all policies initiative. And I think one of the key themes that we're hoping, there's two key themes that we have here. First, that there isn't a right way to do health and all policies. There's things we've all learned that we hope we can share some of with you today. But my view of health and all policies is sort of let a thousand flowers bloom, which I tried to use in a title, but I was told I couldn't. The other big theme is that because there's so many different aspects of how we implement health and all policies, and because the context for implementing health and all policies differs so much from place to place, from state to state, from country to country, we think it's really important that we, over time, develop kind of a community of practice. So we are hoping that this session, like one that we had last year, really helps us on the way to developing a community of practice where we can learn from each other and also actually have people that are doing health and all policies in various guises in different places and actually know who we can call when we get stuck. Because all of us that are doing this work have gotten stuck. We have, in California, produced a guide for local and state government on health and all policies and how to implement it. But we've learned a lot even since we did that, and there's lots of lessons that we wish we could have put in the guide when we did it that have come out of our conversations with other people. So I want to know who's in the room. How many people here work in local health departments? Great. And how many work in an academic setting? How many work in a healthcare setting? Students? Okay. That's just to give the people on the panel a little bit of a sense. Are there people here that work in organizations that wouldn't identify as being a health-affiliated organization? Okay. There is a sign-up sheet that's going around. Please sign in, and now I'm going to just get going right away and introduce the panelists. So starting, I'll just go down the line here. Lexi Nolan is the Vice President for Impact for the Episcopal Health Foundation in Houston, Texas. She oversees planning and evaluation to ensure impact through the work of the foundation and its partners and beneficiaries, and also is responsible for continuous learning processes, networking, convening to bring partners together, and the engagement with the Diocese of Texas Leadership and Outreach Ministries. Before she joined the foundation, Lexi served as the director of the Center to Eliminate Health Disparities and the associate director of the Coordinating Center for Global Health at University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston, and as the secretariat of the World Health Organization Commission on Social Determinants of Health, and also in the Division of Health and Human Development at the Pan American Health Organization. So she has a lot of experience in addressing social and health inequities and in leadership development for social change in health. Thank you, Lexi, for joining us. Brian Johnson is an epidemiologist, or the epidemiologist for the Lane County Lane County Public Health and Trillium Community Health Plan, which is a coordinated care organization. He works to advance the statewide health care reform effort to achieve the triple aim: improved population health, enhanced individual care, and controlled costs. So in that capacity, he's really trying to apply public health science to help tell the story about what keeps people healthy in Lane County, Oregon, and guide action to promote and protect health. He got a master's in public health from Oregon State University and a public health management certificate from the University of Washington. And prior to joining Wayne County, he worked as a research associate and project coordinator doing interactive multimedia health education campaign programs. He's also the past president and current treasurer of the Oregon Public Health Association. Jamie Dirksen is the managing deputy commissioner in the Chicago Department of Public Health, where she focuses on using data to drive organizational practice and continuous quality improvement. She led the department to be one of the first public health departments in the nation to achieve public health accreditation. And now she's leading the development of Healthy Chicago 2.0, which is essentially a public health agenda for the city of Chicago that emphasizes health equity and health and all policies. So she's responsible, in addition to leading Healthy Chicago 2.0, she's responsible for planning, policy, communications, grants, the Office of Violence Prevention and Behavioral Health, Performance and Quality Improvement, and the Office of Epidemiology and Public Health Informatics. So I'm glad you could get away from your office to join us on this panel. She oversaw health policy for the Chicago Public Schools for 7 years and has a master's in social service administration and health administration from the University of Chicago. And last but not least, California's very own, Julia Kaplan. Julia is the program director for the California Health and All Policy Task Force, which is a collaborative process of the California Department of Public Health, the Public Health Institute, and the California Strategic Growth Council. She facilitates the multi-agency process that she will talk about. It brings together over 20 state agencies to promote health equity and sustainability. She has 20 years of experience in community building, social change management, and public policy leadership, and has master's degrees in public policy and public health from the University of California in Berkeley. So it's a fantastic panel. I'm really excited to be able to hear what they have to say. I'm going to start by asking, and we have a microphone here that we can just pass down the line. I'm going to start by asking each of you to just give a really brief overview, and I mean like 3 minutes, telling us a little bit about your health and all policies work, who participates, what its mission is, who facilitates it. It's really just a snapshot.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Lexi Nolan. Really happy to see a nice big crowd for this session. Going to go pretty quickly, but do want to give you a little bit of a background on our story. In 2008, I found myself back in Galveston, Texas, where my husband was finishing his education. And within 6 months of moving there, we woke up one day to find that our city had been destroyed by Hurricane Ike. And, you know, I had been looking for some time for what it was I really wanted to focus my work in Galveston on. And this really interesting opportunity kind of thrust itself upon us. And so we decided to really dedicate the center's work for the next few years on trying to rebuild the city that we lived in a healthier way. Galveston is not known for its social and economic indicators and health successes. It has a lot of challenges. And these were all greatly exacerbated by the hurricane, which was really a flooding disaster for us. And so if you, just for a little bit of orientation on that map, if you were to kind of extend the land just a little southwest and a little northeast, that's our island. It actually goes quite a bit southwest, but that's the city part of the island. And what happened was that the eye of the hurricane came up a channel. These are barrier islands, right? Came up a channel, and it pushed all of the bay water up onto the land mass from the back. So we had this wonderful seawall, which did us exactly zero good, and all of the water flooded into the city, and all of those red areas along the top edge of the island, of course, that is where our lower-income neighborhoods are, and those were the areas that were most hard hit, right? Not a huge surprise. 70% of our buildings were badly destroyed or damaged. We already, as I said, we had very significant health and economic inequities. And it pretty much destroyed our health and safety network. And, you know, nobody was truly prepared. You can prepare all you want, and you can evacuate and do your checklists and pack the car and all of it. We were not prepared. Not prepared for this. So we started thinking, and one of the real concerns that we had was that we realized that this was not a problem of having a single issue that we were going to need to think about. This was a problem that was going to create a cumulative effect where health risks and vulnerabilities, whether they were related to poverty or social networks, were going to be on steroids. Right, and they were going to be massively exaggerated for folks who had the least means to deal with them. And so we kind of just started thinking about all of the different ways that this domino effect could play out. And what we quickly realized was that there was not some kind of nice, neat little project that could house this kind of challenge, and that we weren't going to know what the challenges were until they started emerging. So we needed to have a really adaptive kind of approach to thinking about what this was going to look like. But at the same time, as Linda mentioned, I had worked on the WHO Secretariat for the Commission on Social Determinants of Health, and so I had this background on health and all policies, and that seemed like an opportunity to really think about how we could use that with some particular opportunities that the disaster presented itself with, which included things like, after the disaster, the community had this vision of a model community that they immediately wanted to pick up again. We had synchronized planning cycles, which created an opportunity to do coordinated planning in a way you don't normally have. People wanted to break through silos in new ways. There was an enormous amount of money that was dumped into our community all of a sudden that could be used to do things in a better way if we could get our act together. There was intense focus, people had tremendous energy, and it was an opportunity to really look at structures, policy, and planning. So early in 2009, we were very lucky to receive a little bit of money from the Catholic Campaign for Human Development, and then late in the year we got an NIH grant for about $2 million for three extended to 4 years, and we just began. And this was Recovery Act money, right? So we just began rolling out projects. And, I mean, this is the short list. This is the very short list because we had to do quick presentations today. But this, it just gives you a little bit of a flavor. I mean, of the very kind of adaptive way that we were kind of trying to respond to things that were happening. And I just want to kind of finish up with a few of some of the real-time lessons and some of the kind of implications for larger work. Really, the enthusiasm, in this kind of a context, the enthusiasm fades quickly unless the work is institutionalized. It's very difficult to institutionalize the work if it's the first time people are being presented with these kinds of ideas because they don't know what to do with it. But if you don't get it institutionalized, there's too much chaos and you get lost. A good piece of news is that don't be afraid if some initiatives stall at first, they might find a home later. Play the long game. There are really some interesting opportunities to use multiple lenses in addition to kind of doing this disaster response approach. You could do health and all planning, health and all policies initiatives that have a disaster lens with them, or you could do a disaster planning that has a health lens with it. There are lots of different kind of creative ways to think about this kind of work. And there's also a need to really develop planning guidelines that create synergies. We have a real rigidity still in thinking about how to use health and all policies and how social determinants work. So for instance, when you work with planners, a lot of times they can talk about land use, but they think about the physical structures and they don't think about how land use actually shapes social environments and has an enormous effect on that if you're thinking very creatively. So that's some work we need to do. And then in terms of the larger work, really being able to identify areas where disaster recovery decision-making processes could be improved to have better impact on health equity, including processes for prepping and setting up the work, mapping the funding flows, because once that money comes into the community, all hell will break loose if you're not ready to use it effectively. And if you miss the timing on it, it's kind of divided for you. Really figuring out the pre-disaster planning opportunities that both strengthen health and accelerate recovery, and collecting the indicators related to health and health equity that have more pronounced effects and cumulative effects, and what is the science behind that we need to be paying attention to understand the tremendous inequities that this kind of an experience brings, because we still don't really capture what the full impact is on the folks who leave the city and never come back, are quiet because their voices got squashed in the process. There are lots of ways that we're still missing a lot of that information. So there are lots of work that we can do to advance this work. Thanks very much.
All right, quick hi, I'm Jamie from Chicago, and I'm gonna talk about how our health and policies work really started primarily with government agencies and how we expand that to the community. So back in 2006, and I apologize if anyone was in my session just previously, because this is a repeat, this first slide I should say. So we started the Interdepartmental Task Force on Childhood Obesity. The Consortium to Lower Obesity in Chicago recently released data that said that 1 in 4 Chicago children started kindergarten overweight or obese, and so certainly that was very alarming, and the public health agency and the public education agency said, what are we going to do about this? So let's bring in parks and family support services, the other two agencies who have the most sort of contact with children, to sort of sit down and start thinking about what is it that we can do to try to, you know, mitigate the effects of this, you know, entering school overweight or obese, likely not ready to learn. And then as time went on, we expanded that interagency task force to additional departments who had you know, wanted to be involved and were interested. And then sort of the things that aren't bright blue or orange are what evolved into our interagency council that formed in 2011. So in 2011, we released Healthy Chicago, which was the city's public health agenda for the city, sort of laying out 12 priority areas that we as a city health department wanted to focus on. It was really a health department agenda that was pushed out to the community and pushed out to city agencies. And this call to action of our sister and city agencies was to sort of work with us to address some of these problem areas like tobacco, obesity, adolescent health, healthy mothers and babies, et cetera, et cetera. And so the purpose of this was to really sort of leverage our resources and our shared missions to work collectively on policy change. So some of the successes are around healthy vending that came through. So the city has a healthy vending policy, which is great. Working on bike share, so the Divvy program, thinking about complete streets, the pedestrian plan, other plans that came to fruition because we started working together as a city, which was great. And then recently, last year, we started our planning process for Healthy Chicago 2.0, which is our next public health agenda for the city, and really wanted to build off the successes that we've had with our sister and city agencies to sort of know that we can start from somewhere and that start with the relationships that we had through the launch of Healthy Chicago. We made many partnerships across the city with nonprofit organizations, et cetera. And so really thinking about how we can bring all these individuals together to help really create a community health improvement plan for the city of Chicago. So Healthy Chicago 2.0, we started with a vision of focusing on equity and focusing on a health and all policies approach so that we knew that anything that we were going to propose in the plan would impact population health, not individuals. And so that was a really important aspect. And that we would do extensive community engagement. And so really through this process, we were engaging individuals and organizations from across many sectors to engage them in how health impacts their lives. These are some of the city agencies that actually participated in our action teams who worked very intensely over the summer to develop the plan. And these are the 10 action areas that were launched due to this community engagement process. And then really our next steps are formalizing health and all. So we'll be introducing a resolution to City Council in early 2016 and really taking the opportunity to share data more widely across city agencies and think about how we can do more collaborative projects such as health impact assessments and collaborative grant making. And that's all.
Thank you.
Well, hello again. So I'm Brian Johnson. I'm with Lane County Public Health. And just to give you a little context, so Lane County, we're a moderate-sized health department. We have a staff of about 70 or so FTE. Our population is about 350,000 in the county, maybe a little bit more. But we're the size of Connecticut. So large land mass, pretty well spread out. We do have a metropolitan area, I mean, roughly speaking. We have Eugene-Springfield area, which is about two-thirds of the population. The remaining third is in the more rural communities of Lane County, spread out over the area. Our health department, what I want to do today is just give you a quick teaser, and we're going to have plenty of opportunity to answer some questions about how we roll things out. But the example from Lane County is really a very specific example of something we did internally within our organization that grew out. It was really just timely. It happened because a number of things just converged at the same time. So, no relationships to disclose, in case that's important. But really what came out of this, and the specific example I'll be speaking to today, was within our Board of Commissioners, who also serve as our Board of Health in Lane County, they asked us to put forward really a proposal and actually move forward the idea of providing an analysis of the health implications of any policy that's coming before them, and really those that have significant and likely health implications. Very, very brief analysis. We didn't have a lot to work with, and I'll talk more about that as we have time throughout this. This really, well, I'm going to put these out there for you. This all began more or less emerged around June of 2013 when we had adopted our most recent community health improvement plan. Buried within that community health improvement plan was an opportunity there to ask the commissioners in various ways, ways that they could participate in policy making that would advance the community health improvement plan and the missions within it. Once they adopted it, we highlighted a number of different things they could take action on and actually created a work session where they came together and said, okay, we have a long list of things here. Which ones do we want to prioritize and make the top of the list? In that list was health and all policies and the potential review of anything that came before them. They saw that as an easy action. Turns out it wasn't as easy as they hoped for, but that was fine because it set it in motion at that point. So we brought forward a concept paper to them on what that might actually look like, how we would roll it out in our county, knowing that we were trying to get cooperation from all the departments and bringing forward any policy proposals they brought forward. We implemented a planning and consultation work with our staff to develop our training and rollout of the actual administrative policy once it was adopted, trained that staff, and then we have put that in motion back in January of this year and have some preliminary evaluation data that has come along with that as far as how things have gone. But our challenge really was that we didn't have any new resources. This was a new decision from the board. They said, we want to make this happen. It's really just sticking something in our cover memo, right? Well, it wasn't really that so simply. But we didn't have any additional resources. We wanted to build strong support and commitment across all the departments, many, many folks who were going to be involved in doing a health analysis with no particular formalized public health training or health training at all, potentially. And so we moved forward a process of developing these procedures and drafted some administrative procedures, set up a supportive checklist tool, which they would use to do a brief analysis and write these 1 to 2 paragraph analyses, nothing super in-depth, but enough to start the conversation among the commissioners, developed a training to support that, and then created the technical assistance that would go along with that to help them roll it out. And that's really how things flowed out in Lane County. We'll talk more as we move into this down the road.
Thanks. Hi, and I'm Julia Kaplan with the California Health and All Policies Task Force. It's thrilling to see such a full room, I have to say. So I'm really delighted that all of you found us down here in the outskirts of the West Wing over here. So I'm going to talk about our work in California. And just as a refresher about the state of California, it's a large state. We have 38 million people in the state of California. We have big cities, we have small towns, we have vast rural areas, quite a lot of agriculture and agricultural areas, a very high immigrant population in California. It's very diverse in terms of demographics. 60% of California residents are people of color, or a lot of people are using the term of the global majority. And we have very significant health inequities by race and income. So Linda mentioned the California Health and All Policies Task Force. This is a state-level initiative, and that's what I'm going to talk about today. This initiative was created in 2010 through a governor's executive order, really out of a recognition that we needed to engage all sectors of government in tackling the really immense health disparities and inequities that we face. And he was also really interested in environmental sustainability, and so our task force actually bridges those two issues. We have 22 agencies and departments on this task force. You can see some of the logos up there: transportation, agriculture, education, land use. And the task force is accountable to the Strategic Growth Council, which is a cabinet-level body made up of secretaries of a variety of agencies. And this is significant for a couple of reasons, that the Strategic Growth Council is a direct line to the governor, so there's a high level of accountability for the task force. And the Strategic Growth Council is charged with environmental sustainability, so doing a lot of our climate change work, and that has shaped the focus area of our work. And the big challenge for us in launching this task force was, great, we have all these people at the table, but can we get them to actually work together, to actually embrace these values, and can we really change the culture of government? So one of the keys that we have found in doing this work is having a backbone staff. And I really like this quote from John Kania and Mark Kramer, who are kind of pioneers of the collective impact work. They say that the expectation that collaboration can occur without a supporting infrastructure is one of the most frequent reasons why it fails. We have really learned this through our work. And as a backbone staff, we facilitate task force meetings, we conduct research. Is that for me? Is that my time? Okay. It's not over. It's just an update. we conduct a significant amount of background work in order to keep the task force going, facilitating consensus, quite a lot of iterative work. And some of the strategies for collaboration that we use are embedding health and equity into existing areas of work. So this is not about creating new programs and projects. It's about taking what's already happening and making it better. We organize multi-agency working groups and multi-agency work plans, and we've found that through those, relationships emerge. It's been amazing to find how many people, when we bring people together across departments, how often they don't know each other already, even though they're in high-level leadership working on many of the same issues. And when we get those people in the room, ideas emerge that we could never have thought of. And that has been our approach to identifying many of our solutions. So I'm going to stop there. We'll have more time to talk over the next few minutes.
Thank you all. I think it's, just for me, it's incredibly interesting to
listen to these, you know, very thumbnail sketches of what folks are doing, because they're so different. We have, you know, a couple of you know, formalized interagency task forces in California and Chicago. We have sort of a very internal process in Lane County. We have a very broad, you know, agency and community process in the context of disaster recovery. So I want to ask, and you don't all have to answer every question, but I want to hear a little bit more about how health and all policies or health and health equity focused approach emerged as a key way for agencies to work together. In Galveston, for example, you know, you gave a nice description of there was this big problem. How was it that health became kind of a central focus in the rebuilding of Galveston and a lens through which a lot of the disaster recovery happened? How was it that of all the different things where agencies in Chicago could have come together, that was what emerged in Lane County? Why were the commissioners even ready to adopt this health and all policies recommendation? What was going on in sort of the community context, you know, underneath the disaster, underneath obesity, that made health and all policies sort of take off?
Sure. Yeah, I'm not sure I can say that we were enormously successful. I think what I can say is this was a really interesting experiment, and I think that it changed the local understanding of a lot of these concepts, and it invigorated people who continue to do the work. But we really felt like we were chasing a moving train the whole time. And, you know, that's kind of the nature of a disaster. But the reality is that we were constantly trying to figure out who can be our champion, how do we frame this issue, how do we work with the community. And working with the community was an extremely, extremely high priority for us, to really use a community-based approach. And we quickly realized the community had almost no language to talk about these kinds of issues. And we just invested the first 9 months in massive amounts of training on social determinants and things like that. And that actually became a real strength for us in the process.
I'm going to say, in Lane County, I already mentioned a little bit what drove this to start with was our community health improvement plan. But a lot of it emerges from the relationships that were being built before that. A couple things. One, our director of our department had spent a fair amount of time bringing the commissioners up to speed. They had made a relatively recent discovery of their power as the Board of Health for our county, which was surprising, but more of a legal issue than anything. They discovered their ability to establish policies that would, which was well above and beyond anything they had done. Countywide implications that was very specific to their role as the Board of Health. And that had been a recent discovery, along with a number of high-profile policy issues, in particular tobacco issues, had been in front of them. They had some success around that, and they had seen and gotten a fair amount of positive feedback from the community and seen the potential in which they could use health to advance many things they care about. So I think that's what was kind of advancing at the time. And so when our community health improvement plan was adopted, it was something they now were standing behind. They said that like to advance this in the community. So they had now made a formal commitment to the community to advance health. And they had also, it had also aligned very specifically with the countywide strategic plan. So those, the alignments of these very formal documents, as well as some of the behind the scenes discussions that have been going on, created this opportunity now for us to have a conversation more about health and then put forward a number of ideas. This happened to be one of many, and they latched onto it because it seemed even. But we can talk more about that.
So I think in Chicago, the sort of the interagency task task force was one thing that sort of started around one, I won't say small issue, but one, you know, one specific issue. But I think when Healthy Chicago was released, the mayor of Chicago released, you know, released this plan. It's the first time a mayor sort of stepped out in front of public health, which is a big deal in Chicago. And I think we, as a health department, really took full advantage of this sort of, you know, mayoral support of public health. And by convening the Interagency Council in late 2011, it sort of teed up really nicely to marketplace enrollment opportunities. And so how can we use this body of government infrastructure to really promote enrollment in Chicago? We had a half a million people that needed to be, that were eligible and needed to be enrolled in the city of Chicago. And so how can we use this infrastructure to really promote and to do enrollment? And I think that was, I think timing was everything. So timing was great. And we had great success with our city agencies stepping up and saying, absolutely, the library, the rehabber library is trained to be in-person assisters, which was huge in the city of Chicago. We have, I think, 60 libraries or something like that. And so every librarian was trained and was able to, you know, connect directly with the community. The taxi cab driver that O'Hare and Midway were doing enrollments when they weren't driving people around, it was awesome. So, you know, really trying to target the right set of folks through city government, and we were really successful, and I think people felt really good about doing that. So it only felt natural that when we were going to start doing the development of Healthy Chicago 2.0 to really strongly engage our city agencies so that they could be at the table at the very beginning to help plan and to help develop what the strategies are and to co-locate their priorities in our plan. I think we had an interagency council meeting last week, and one of the city commissioners said, so how is this not the plan for the city? And I said, that's a very good point. Wouldn't it be great to have a plan for a city? But, you know, ours really does have a health focus, even though we have housing, environment, economic, safety, you know, indicators and strategies in it. All of these things impact health. So whatever impacts health is what we're going to include in our health plan. And that means that, you know, many of us, if, you know, we talk about the public health system, that it's just raising awareness about how we all play a very important role in ensuring the health of communities. And that really equals the quality of life of communities. And so I think timing has been great, and just, you know, ensuring we maintain this engagement and commitment to the process, I think will be successful.
And Linda, I'm wondering, actually, you want to answer this question for California because you really are founder of this initiative.
Well, I mean, I'm hearing some themes in these answers, and California sort of adds to the themes, which are, we have ideas about social determinants of health, and we often don't know how we're going to inject them into the larger conversation, which really is what Health in All Policies is about. And so it's sort of, you know, I think a lot of times it's being opportunistic so that when an opportunity arises where we can, you know, hook onto other priorities of people in power or use situations, even adverse ones, to start talking to the community and policymakers about social determinants or find ways where there's something other people want to get done that we can offer this, you know, you can only do that through a cross-sectoral collaboration. There's a receptivity. So if we put together our sort of ideas and vision about Health in All Policies, whatever you want to call it, with these opportunities that come up, you never know when. It might be literally when a hurricane strikes. Then we can actually get these things going, and that was exactly what happened in California. We had a governor who was interested in childhood obesity. We had a governor who was interested in climate change. We'd been talking to the Health and Human Services Secretary about how much of what we wanted to get done in chronic disease prevention really required health and all policies. And when the governor asked the Health and Human Services Secretary what should we do in terms of a few policy initiatives that he could announce at a childhood obesity prevention summit with President Bill Clinton, we said health and all policies. And we were actually a little bit surprised that they bit. We put it out there with about five other proposals, and she came back and said, okay, tell us what to do on health and all policies by tomorrow. And we're like, oh my God. So we proposed the task force for lack of knowing what else to propose. But so I think this concept of be ready for an opportunity to suggest some kind of formalized structure for health and all policies is a really important theme that I'm hearing here. And the other thing is something that Lexi mentioned, which is, you know, the lens might not be health all the time. In Chicago, it clearly was. Ours was, but with a really clear directive to also put sustainability at the center. You could have called your initiative just a disaster initiative. So the terminology isn't all always critical if the notion of really putting health equity and sustainability at the heart of how decision making happens is, I think, really important. So there, go ahead.
In terms of California, that initial hook got us going, but we're now in our 6th year doing this work, and we have had a lot of turnover in leadership within our government, and so we had to continually find new hooks. And so the climate change and childhood obesity piece has remained, but we're continually looking to see what priorities are that are coming out from the legislature or from the governor, and figuring out how we help other entities those goals while bringing a health plan in.
Okay. So, each of you has mentioned a couple of challenges that you faced in implementing these initiatives, and I'm wondering if you can maybe say a few more about them. Lexi, I was particularly interested in what you talked about in terms of the lack of real awareness amongst either community members or policymakers about what the social determinants of health are. So I'd like to hear just a bit more about that from you, hear whether that's been an issue for others as well and how you've addressed it.
Sure, so when we became painfully aware of how difficult some of these concepts were to use as rallying points for the community to, you know, hey, this is something we can do. We began doing an enormous amount of training, and I knew that we were starting to make a difference when people at the end of the training would get, I mean, I'll never forget this woman. She stood up towards the end of our session, and she said, so what I hear you telling me is that not only do I live in a food desert, but I live in a seafood desert. She was not happy about living in a seafood desert. And so it kind of, that opportunity to give people language and words was a game changer for them. And we supported them to do things like talk with officials, how you have a conversation about this and that. That was really useful. It was, I gotta say, a crisis situation is not the best way to do this kind of work. We were able to do some interesting things circumstantially, but it requires too much preparation, too much taking people with you, accompaniment processes if you really want to change kind of the community vision, relationship building. That's a really challenging one. And one of the things that we didn't anticipate that emerged in the process was that a huge fight about public housing came out of this recovery process, and we had to respond to it. It was not something that we could, you know, conveniently omit from our health project, we had to say, this is an equity issue. These people have a right to, you know, the recovery process, and really found ourselves in the middle of a very big political battle that, you know, we eventually kind of won, but it was painful, and a lot of people came away with black eyes. But we were also proud to stand with the community and to provide them with the evidence that they needed and to work with people to talk about the issues and to try to, you know, navigate solutions that were really helpful to everyone. And one of the big successes that we had at the very end was that one of the city council members who had been most critical of our work and most vehemently against it and most against the public housing, when we actually developed the tool for community development improvement and showed it to him, he became our biggest fan. He said, this is the best thing that the city has had to work with in 20 years, and we're going to start using this. And so it was, you know, the framing issues were huge, but you can also find yourself in a funny position if you don't have that time to plan.
Do any of you want to speak more from the community level for ours? It's so specific. So our internal audience really for this was our departments, our department leadership, as well as the board commissioners. So the challenges that we were up against is really the pushback and the implementation and rollout of this. And I'll say initially, while the commissioner said it would be wonderful to have a health analysis come before us for any policy, the department director is just saying, yeah, well, okay, so that's going to be a fair amount of work. What's that going to look like? What's the burden on our staff? And really, what advantages may come out of this in the end that's going to further our work that aligns with our mission, our department's goals, our department's mission? I think it really opened up a great opportunity. We addressed that very specifically in a number of ways. One, we had champions on staff who were ready to move stuff forward. In particular, we had another sort of convenient timing issue in the sense that our recent county administrator had stepped away, had left left her position, and our director of corporate human services had stepped up as the county interim county administrator. So that was timely. She was ready to advance as the county administrator, policy making was in place. But also, we took some time to really dig into what were the issues the directors were worried about and the frontline staff were concerned about. And I mentioned they were primarily concerns and worries about whether this was, first of all, a discussion about how it was going to get away in front of the policy, say, that invested a fair amount of time to move forward. We took a lot of time to, first of all, work through our language after we talked with, we interviewed staff and front lines and said, you know, what are you doing? What are you afraid of? How can we help you move this forward? What are your concerns? But we were able to take that and learn the language that actually resonated. And in the end, when we started talking about health, it was important for us to say, first of all, you're already doing work that advances health, whether you want or not. And we made those connections so that we had training, walked through a training around the social determinants and connected them back to each of the departments, gave them opportunities to really talk through that. And then second, we also spent some time acknowledging that, yes, there was going to be a little bit of work involved. We do recognize that, and you know, this is where we're moving forward, so we're going to help you be successful at it. And so we approached it that way. And then thirdly, we really pointed out the fact that because they're advancing health and because of the type of work they're doing, it really strengthened what they were trying to advance. It was one more, generally speaking, one more support for why they were trying to move something forward, because it was going to have positive health implications. Now, of course, that's not always the case, but in those circumstances, they could at least speak to the positives, they could speak to the negatives, and there was an opportunity there. So that helps to garner some support from the municipal.
So I think our biggest challenge in Chicago is competing interests and time. So I think that, you know, on the surface, everyone agrees that health is important and probably things that we do impact the health of others. But some specific examples I think are around you know, what does the data say and how are we explicitly calling out data? So 4 years ago, we would have never been able to publicly acknowledge the significant disparities of every health condition in the city. There was a lot of resistance around doing that. And I think
think that, you know, if we want to have an equity approach, we must be able to do that. So there's less resistance around that today, which is great, but I also just think it's timing. We had a very contested mayoral election that really sort of emphasized the importance of community and what community thinks and how you engage community, and I think that we were doing our engagement process during the election process, and so, you know, we heard a lot from residents and from stakeholders about those challenges, and I think clearly the mayor and his team have heard this loud and clear, and now community engagement is one of the top three priorities of the mayor. So I think that, again, timing is everything. I think that, you know, we have agencies that have dual purpose, so violence is a huge issue in our city, and while the mayor's office will say violence is a public health issue, but they go to police to solve the public health violence problem, which, you know, is not necessarily a bad thing unless police and public health aren't really talking to each other. So, you know, people are really busy, and I think it's hard to have these competing priorities, and even if you are talking with someone in an agency, it may not be the right someone, and so, you know, we're experiencing this now with strategies that we tried to lay out in our plan, and there are departments who have concerns, department heads who have concerns, because while their staff may have been supportive of a strategy, their leadership is nervous about the strategy. So, you know, this compromising is happening right now, which is interesting, but I think that makes this work hard, yet, you know, that's what will make it good if we can have these conversations.
I made some notes of three different challenges that I thought I would highlight that we've been facing in our California work. One of them, which I refer to, is a high level of leadership turnover. Since our initiative has began 5.5 years ago, we have had two governors, one a second governor, two health secretaries, and four directors of public health. In addition to that, with those, each time that those offices change turnover, other offices also turn over because we're working with high-level people who are political appointees. And so there's a continual process of briefing, of identifying new champions, of offering help, of kind of reminding people that this has been a history, that we've been involved already, and really keeping this work appealing and relevant. At the same time, we have found that some people who have come into leadership, because we've been doing this for what feels to us like not very long, but they say, well, it just seems like this is the way it always has been, so we should be involved because their predecessor has been involved, and so that's been interesting as well. A second challenge is that over time, a few of our department partners have taken really big steps in this work and have actually assigned staff internally to be health experts or have hired people who are health experts, which has been a huge success and really tremendous in terms of advancing this work. But sometimes they then take the attitude that we've got it covered. We've got health covered and we can do it ourselves. And in fact, you know, there's a reason that we have thousands of employees in the health department because there are a lot of different specialized areas. And so it's just added another layer to the challenges of collaboration when we're adding in health people in all of these agencies and what kind of structure needs to happen around that. And then the third piece is around stakeholder engagement. And
why don't you hold that, because I'm going to ask all of you to talk about that in a minute, if you don't mind.
Okay. Sure.
But why don't you keep the mic, because I want to ask each of you to pick one of the challenges that you identified and talk about what you feel best about in how you've addressed that challenge and turned it into a success. I know that question wasn't on your...
Well, I think that it's just going to be about
stakeholder
engagement.
Okay,
but I have
things
to say on this.
Okay, we'll stick on stakeholder engagement.
One challenge around stakeholder engagement has been that we're working at the state level, and we have 38 million people in the state. It's really hard to conceive of, you know, what does stakeholder engagement look like? formed some really great partnerships with people at the local level who can help us with stakeholder engagement. So local health departments, nonprofit organizations, community-based organizations, who sometimes will actually convene people in their communities to give us input, and at other times we'll go to them and they'll help us figure out what we need to know based on any of the processes that they've already managed. And so I've been very pleased with that. I think there's more for us to learn.
So I'll share an example of you know, this notion of competing priorities and not having enough time. And during, you know, early on in our sort of planning phase, we stumbled upon a planning phase that another agency was embarking upon, the planning department, and really looking at redefining neighborhoods in Chicago, which is a big deal. So there are 77 communities in Chicago. They will be redefining neighborhoods to 16 regions. And so we stumbled upon this, and there was this sort of initially an aggressive means to like get this plan out. That was last April, and it hasn't come out yet. So thank goodness, because we saw this as an opportunity to really figure out how to infuse health. And so we saw sort of a draft plan that somehow we were invited to a meeting, which was great. And sort of said, this is, you know, interesting. You have like the, you know, you have sort of what assets are in a community. You have what the population is, just sort of census data. But wouldn't it be more interesting if you had some health outcome data in here? And, you know, they were like, yeah, sounds great. Okay, we got to get this thing going. So I think that, you know, there was some resistance at first because that meant A, we were going to stall their process, and B, you know, they had a timeline they wanted to be on, and they had already this layout and design, and we would be like, you know, messing with the layout and all this other stuff. So I think that we took the sort of stance that we wanted to be persistent, that this was a really great opportunity to have a citywide plan around economic development that really had a health focus, so that there was a health page in every one of the 16 regions that said, this is what the health of your community looks like. And additionally, there was a request that all sort of improvements to communities be included in this plan. So we created plans to improve the community. But in the planning frame, that's infrastructure. So what are the capital, what are the buildings that you're gonna create? What are the parks you're gonna build? And in health, it's different because it's, you know, it could be a policy or it could be a program. And so we had to work with them to figure out how to make that happen. And I think that just multiple conversations and building relationships, which again, I think is critical, really helped us to, A, we have this health page, which is super exciting, and B, figuring out how we can include our projects on their sort of trend line that will show, you know, by not only having capital and parks and schools, if you have public health infrastructure, then you will have a better community. And retailers or businesses will be interested in coming into that space. So I think that it was, you know, it will remain a challenge because we have to be the ones who are putting ourselves out there and following up and, you know, doing the legwork. But if we're persistent, then, you know, so far we've succeeded.
You know, I think I've probably addressed some of the stuff already that we were up against as far as engagement. But I think one of the things I would put out there is, you know, we don't really see this as the ideal way to have rolled this out. We've put out a very brief analysis that's occurring at the very last step. Somebody is bringing forward a policy that we're hoping to pass at that point, and now we're inserting the health analysis. That's just far too late in the process. I mean, it's okay, but it's not where we want to be. So we have a vision for earlier in the process to really have the health discussion be incorporated in any planning process earlier in the policy development. And so when we went into this, we saw this as the opportunity to open that door. And as we were getting a lot of pushback on this, we wanted to start framing it so that discussion would happen. And I think the success that came out of it, we really did move in that direction. The one example that's starting to emerge right now is with our public works department, who shortly after we started working with them, and they even started writing some health implication statements, came to us and said, no, we would prefer to do this earlier in the process. And we said, oh, great, really? So we were So I think what has happened at this is opened the door for us to start to go more upstream analysis. And since our public works department is where a large majority of the money is flowing in the county, I think it's going to be a perfect opportunity to, one, to try it out and see if it successfully emerge, but then find ways in which we can roll it out more successfully throughout the county. So we'll definitely be building up this opportunity.
Yeah, I think there's a real value to recognize that the failures aren't always failures. Any opportunity to engage often will contribute something that's meaningful, you know, better if it's more successful, but still, you know, the little opportunistic insertion points where you're having a conversation with the parks director and you just happen to mention, oh, that's a good idea, yeah, right, you know. All the way to the very coordinated kind of initiatives. I would say that key to turning failures into successes is particularly pronounced when you use an accompaniment approach with the community, so that the community is really participating in the work itself, participating in the identification of the priority setting, because even if you don't get the policy work done today, you now have a group of people who can drive that work, who understand the language, who can self-organize, and who will continue to bring these concepts back to the table in other opportunities that you may not even be aware of. So I think that's really important. One of the things that we found was also that our disaster recovery work was then, but what it led to was a broader community development process that's actually much more useful. So we kind of blended one into the next. So it had a sustainability component to it, even though it started out ostensibly as disaster recovery work. And then the last thing I would say is, there's really, I started by saying, you know, it's not the best entry point and things like that, but there's a component of this work that's really about the planning and the setup piece, that if you have the right planning and the setup piece in place, that you can actually make this very effective in terms of disaster recovery. Because think about the amount of money we dump into communities after a disaster that can be leveraged for help, that we would never in a million years dump into these communities just for help, right? Right? But you need sidewalks to get all of a sudden, and everybody's doing their planning on where the sidewalks are. That's the opportunity. And I think that with climate change, you know, I hate to say it, but there's going to be a lot more opportunities for this. And one of the implications of that is that maybe this work shouldn't be being driven just at a local level. Maybe part of the planning process really has to be taken up to the national level. And so, you know, I've been talking with IOM. They put out a document on this kind of work a few months ago that was really nice write-up about it. But, you know, it's tough to get those audiences, and the federal government moves at a snail's pace. So I think that really trying to get some of the thinking around the health and all policies work that could happen at a local level, but really is being driven at the federal level, is actually a really important conversation to continue.
Yeah, that's an interesting comment because, you know, there is a, we have a very supportive administration right now on climate change, and there is a national prevention council that is sort of the federal counterpart of, you know, health and all policies. So I think making a suggestion to them that they kind of really think as well about just what you're saying would be good. So while you've got the mic, Lexi, you've talked a fair amount about community engagement. But what I want to get at is sort of the nitty gritty of what you're actually doing. And people have to keep this very short, I'm sorry. But, you know, how it looks, how you get the right people at the table that are, in fact, community leaders, and what you see as sort of some of the challenges of having government agencies working, you know, many agencies, we've learned, aren't as open to community engagement as public health for a whole variety of reasons. So how do you both work in partnership with the community
and really engage the community and not have your other agencies feel concerned that you're riling up the community.
Yeah, they were very concerned we were riling up the community. We owned it, you know. But one of the ways that we tried to deal with that...
Well, we have to build the relationships on both sides to make health and policy.
Exactly. So one of the things that we did was when we got to the piece about the public housing recovery, which was a nasty, vicious fight, we decided that maybe we weren't going to be the voice that led that work. But what we did was we convened an advisory committee that included lots of city officials, but also social services agencies, community representatives. The police department was in there. The chair of the local port, who, you know, is a big stakeholder there, right, was in there. We had the faith community in there. We had a city council member, president of the Chamber of Commerce. And we really, really tried to support them to identify priorities and to really guide the health impact assessment work on how to help us choose the right language and all of that. And that made an enormous difference. And one of the, I had somebody come up to me at the end of that process and who was kind of on the more conservative side, he said, "I never thought I would be able to stick this 2-year planning process out. I thought I was going to be out of here in a month, but this was really, really interesting and I learned a lot and I have a different take on this stuff now." So we actually were able to produce a proposal that everybody was happy with, and that was a success.
Great. Brian, you don't have community engagement in your health and all policies process, but you came out of your community health improvement plan with health and all policies embedded in it in some way. So was there community engagement in the community health improvement process?
Yes, but I'm not sure it really speaks to this example.
Okay, that's fine.
You don't have
to answer.
So I think that our approach was through actually creating, so our Healthy Chicago 2.0 will be our community health improvement plan. And so we set up at the beginning to have extensive community engagement, and we did that by, trying to figure out where, going to the places where we knew there were the greatest disparities, partnering with local community-based organizations there to try to get them to have their partner organizations bring people out and bring residents out. In some cases, we were really successful, and in other cases, not so much. We did five or six, I think, at the beginning, and I was like, I want 100 people at every one of these things. And we got almost 100 at one of them. I felt like that was a failure. But at the same time, we engaged people that we had never engaged before, and so I think that was a huge success. And then when it came to actually creating the plan, we sort of sent it back out to everybody who had participated in any part of the planning process to date to say who wants to participate in this planning process, who can commit a significant amount of time for a short period of time to help us do this. And, I think it was difficult for people to, it was over the summer, we wanted people to meet 8 times in 2 months, it was kind of crazy. We extended the time once they told me how crazy I was. But I think that, we had tons of people who were interested, which was actually really surprising to us. We wanted to select 100, we had 255. But we also knew that all of those 200 weren't the right people because they didn't represent certain sectors or they didn't represent certain demographics. And so, once you put people in a room focused on a certain area, then they can say, who you're missing. And this person. And so, using the people that they know a lot of people too. And so how do you leverage all of the partners that you have to create more partnerships and try to do a good job of keeping them engaged, which is challenging, but it's still challenging. But it's a good learning process.
Yeah. Good.
So I already said a little bit about our stakeholder engagement process, but what I wanted to add is that engaging stakeholders has added tremendous value to our work in a number of ways. One of those is that stakeholder engagement has helped us push issues that are difficult to push within government. So for example, having conversations about equity and racism, it's very important that we have continually heard from community members and local organizations that represent local communities that this is a priority, and that has allowed us to continue to bring this work to the agendas of the meetings that we're having within government. We've also been able to really have kind of an inside-outside strategy where we're working on the inside, but we're really partnering with people on the outside. And that includes, as the work progresses, and you know, we've had opportunities to really influence some processes around land use planning or transportation decisions within government. We can go back out to local communities and ask them, now, you know, you said we should get in at this table. We are at the table, so now what do you want us to do? And we can't always promise to do exactly what they want, but what we can promise to do is bring the messages to the table and float ideas, and so we have some great partnerships emerge.
Great. So I want to make sure we really do leave time for questions and conversation and to hear what some of you all are doing and your thoughts in response to this terrific panel. Maybe each of you can give us like one or two sentences max, really short, about what would be your as we're walking out the door, sentence of advice for people that are embarking on a Health and All Policies initiative.
I have been really impressed by the people that I work with and the quote-unquote non-health agencies, and I think I went in with a lot of preconceived notions that people wouldn't understand these issues or have very different priorities, but in fact, it's very human to care about health, to care about people, to care about children, to care about elderly, you know, to care about our communities, and it's very easy to connect with people around values, and that's really been a great way to establish a baseline for why we're doing this work.
So mine sort of echoes this, that you sort of start with these values when you're engaging people, but that you must be persistent in this work. That, you know, this is what you care about and what we care about, and not everyone else is not their top priority. So, and maybe it will never be their top priority, but we always need to be the message in the back of their head around why health is important in all decision making. So I just say be persistent.
And I'll echo that, both of those comments as well. What I would add to that is that it's not necessary that we actually talk about health using the word health. I mean, folks resonate to lots of things which are the keywords you're just alluding to. And if we can be cognizant of the folks we're approaching and what's important to them and where we have shared values, that will still advance health. And I think that's the strategy that will help us move forward.
I think a lot of this work is still funded work, it's not considered mandated work, core responsibilities. And for those of you who are planning to engage it, I would just say with the funded work, try to push your funders, and I'm saying this as a part of the funder community, right? Push your funders to give you flexibility about where the work can go, because if you lock in too early, then you can't follow where the momentum is and you can't follow where the opportunities present themselves. And if you're trying to fight to get other people to buy into this stuff, waste a lot of time and opportunity. If you have flexibility to navigate the terrain and go with your community or go with your stakeholders, that can be really helpful.
Great. So I want to thank the panel. I want to thank Karen Ben-Moshe for helping organize this session and make everything actually work out. I want to thank Tia Taylor. Raise your hand. Oh, I thought I saw her. Okay. I want to thank Tia Taylor in absentia from APHA, who has really been a big champion of Health and All Policies and also helped us with this session as well as with the guide. And I want to open it up for questions, comments, thoughts, sharing what you're doing, things that resonated with you here that made you have some new idea about what you could do at home. Or questions. Come on, folks, don't be shy. I have a lot of comments and questions, but I've already gotten to ask some of mine. Yes.
I thought it was very interesting what Julia said about looking at the priorities of other people and other actors. And
can you stand up so others can hear you? Thanks.
I'm Eva Olila from Finland, and I also work with Have No Policies, and I thought that what Julia said about understanding other people's priorities and looking what they are and how you can engage is extremely important, and also to anticipate what other people are doing. And sometimes you find synergies, and sometimes you find that you mean that you're unlikely to find synergies. But then, even then, you have to anticipate very well what other people are doing and have your data and evidence ready. In my experience, many times you can still find a solution because people are basically bad. They just have different kind of mindsets, but if you have your evidence ready and your you can argument and you know yourself, you can get very far. And what Brian just said about the other people's language, like if I would talk with education people, many times for instance I would talk about the learning ability of the children, you know, are they hungry, are they restless and so on, and while talking about health, you may not always use the word health, and so like looking out of your own box is probably what Health and Home Policy is about, I think.
Can I completely agree with that, obviously, but the one thing I would put out there too is that our partners are also looking to us as health professionals too. So they also appreciate that we are bringing our expertise to the table and they can bring their expertise. And then where we have overlap, we can advance the policy. So it's important as public health professionals to really be out there and say and own that you are a professional trained in the field. And sometimes I think we forget that we really have that to offer at the table. So even inviting ourselves to the table is sometimes the most important step.
Another twist on that is that I'm sure you all can provide examples of this as well, but we've seen a number of situations where as the health experts, we've kind of been able to be open to different parties that are having conflicts amongst themselves, because sometimes there's multiple different things that impact health. So we've got a lot of conversation about siting of transit-oriented development and air quality and affordable housing, where our housing agency, our planning agencies, our transportation agencies, and our air board have not seen eye to eye, and because all of those things are important from a health perspective, we've been able to kind of mediate and at least not to resolution. Leanne can tell you how hard the resolution piece has been, but at least mediate a conversation that tries to stay kind of health oriented.
I would add, Eva brought up education. One thing that's been interesting in our relationship with our education partners, when we go meet with them, they will often, especially if it's somebody new that we're meeting with, they'll often, you know, start off by talking about food and physical activity, which are, of course, important to us in the school environment. People often say to them, you know, actually, educational attainment itself is a huge predictor and driver of health outcomes, and so we're not just here to tell you to give our kids more, you know, healthy food and physical activity, but we want to help you with graduation rates and truancy issues. And that often comes as a surprise, but that would be an interest of ours.
Which gets back to what Lexi started with at the beginning, that, you know, we have a big lift still in public health to get people to understand the social determinants of health. Other questions and comments? Ray.
Ray Lewis from Minnesota. And one of the things I picked up to kind of counterbalance the health professionalism is the humbleness of we're not the experts in your field, we're staff. We help you, and it's looking for that ways of taking stuff off their plate or reducing the spinning plates they have, but at the same time putting yourself as an ally and working together for the common good.
Yeah. So, and I'm actually, my work is in the field of the coordinated care organizations. It's not helping to bridge that conversation between our health department and our coordinated care organizations. And I think what we've found along the way is that when the health department is able to say, yes, that's an important issue, and yes, we have this expertise, and here's what we have to offer in this discussion that supports it, I think that, has played out well.
Kathy.
One of the challenges, I come from a small community in California, and one of the challenges in our community has not been unifying around health, because we've done it, it's been the word policy. And so we had a forum in our community about health and policies. It was extremely well attended. We got our health commission engaged. We drafted a resolution to take it to our board of supervisors to simply acknowledge that health should be considered when making decisions. And it was stopped by our administrative office. The Tea Party is alive and well in our community, and the word policy sounds like you're going to make us do what we don't want to do. And so our resolution is still in draft form, and it has not gone anywhere. So we do the work, we just don't talk about it. You know, we don't talk about it in the policy because it's frightening.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's a lot of words we can't say, even though it's really critical that we do. Like, I've been talking all week to people from various parts of the country where they can't say the word climate change, which talk about a problem. But other, yes. If which agencies? Julia, do you want to talk about transportation agencies?
Sure. Yeah, the question about
how do you engage and how?
Yeah, so in California, actually, our work with transportation has been one of our biggest successes. And when we began the process, they were not an easy partner to work with. We have really worked hard to build trust and build relationships there. But because of the focus on climate change and the push to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, our transportation partners are looking at a lot of creative solutions. There's been a great opportunity to bring active transportation in as one of those options. And so they have become very welcoming of our help, and we've actually helped them revise internal guidelines around decision-making. Our transportation agency disseminates funding to local communities for walking and biking infrastructure. And actually, our colleague Meredith Lee has been very involved within the transportation department on health criteria and how to make sure that those funds aren't just going to good proposals written by developers, but are really responding to community needs and the local
And if you want to talk about cap and trade, you can talk to me afterward.
Yeah, I'm going to convert. I teach here to the School of Public Health at UIC. And one thing that I kind of struggle with in terms of our workforce is that do we in public health need to be experts in all these areas? I mean, I think the answer is no. But what is it that we need to be teaching our future leaders in public health? Because when I talk about health and all policies, when I talk about this is public health, and this is public health, and this is public health, then it becomes, then nothing is, everything is public health, and nothing is public health. So we know it's true that everything is public health, but it gets a little overwhelming. And since we can't be an expert in all these things, are we talking about, is it the skills that, Julie, you said something about we help the schools do something. I mean, it's not that you're probably all experts in education, but is it using the basic tools we have in public health of community engagement and collaboration and communication, and this is a different audience for that? Or is it that we really need to be learning and teaching different skills?
So it is using the basic skills, and I would put data analysis there too. But I think that there are some really important skills that students in public health aren't learning that really are at the core of this work, which are the soft skills of how to work with others. What does really deep collaboration mean? And I would say that that's both in terms of working with other sectors and also in terms of working with communities, because I don't think we go deep a lot of times on the community piece of it. So it's, you know, how do you approach somebody else with enough humility that you can really learn that your preconceptions were, you know, just that? How do you balance that with exerting power as public health when it's really important to do so? I mean, we can't always step back and say, oh yes, we understand, that's a problem. You know, sometimes so it's really learning what are these very soft skills of, you know, how do you build a relationship? How do you prepare for your first meeting with another agency that does not really want to come to your table or let you at their table? How do you play the inside-outside game? That's an issue where I get so many questions about it from people that are doing this work in local health departments. How do we balance these constraints of trying to build trust on the inside, because only we can do that, and still being respectful of the community and bringing their message inside? So I think that those are things that can be taught, and that they're not a part of any public health school curriculum that I've seen. I don't know if any of the rest of you want to comment on that. Okay.
The only thing I'd add to that, because I think I agree very much, so it's very much an experiential learning opportunity, though. I mean, you really get that from doing and interacting and having an opportunity. So, even the interns we've brought into our own health department, I've had that same sort of aha moment where it's like, oh, it's not just about, you know, can I look it up, figure out how I'm going to approach it, and then go out and do it. It's the relationship, the maneuvering, and the politics behind it that really was the discovery moment for them.
So our time is up. We have one more Health and All Policy session tomorrow, which Julia will tell you about. It would be great for those of you that are here that you come.
Thank you. Yeah, if you thought this was good, then I think tomorrow might be great. So I know it's hard to make it to sessions Wednesday morning of APHA, but we have a very special panel tomorrow called Health and All Policies Around the Globe. We have four panelists who have traveled from all regions of the earth. I think three of them in the room right now. So Eva Ovila from Finland, who's been very instrumental in shaping the United Nations World Health Organization's health and all policies work. Norbert Forrester from Namibia, who is the Deputy Permanent Secretary for the Ministry of Health and Social Services for the country, and has done really incredible work there as well as with other countries. Sebastian Pena, who is from Santiago, Chile, and is overseeing
I thought we were in good shape with 5 staff, but he had 30, so I'm just really, very incredible. I'm sure there are big challenges. We'll get to hear more about that tomorrow. And then also Trungpa Thai Khanchan of Phitra from Thailand, where Thailand has actually implemented health impact assessments through their constitution and the National Health Act. So don't miss it. It's a very rare opportunity to hear those groups of people in person.
Great. So thank you again to our panelists. Thank you to our audience and your good questions. And we look forward to seeing you tomorrow morning.